at like schools I didn't attend, but they were open to everyone, so I went.
Hello, welcome back to Press Start, How to Become a Game Developers. I am Adam Arisasmita, CEO of Arsenesia and Vice President of Indonesia Game Association. I'm going to be your host for today's episode. As usual, in Press Start, we're going to talk about the game industry, how to start your career, and we're going to invite experts and the industry person to share their journey, to share about their experience, hopefully can inspire you and give you some insight to jump into the game industry. So stay tuned, because Press Start will have a new episode every week on Monday. So make sure you put that on your calendar. And of course, this podcast is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association, or AGI, and Goethe Institute Jakarta. And today we have a very, very special guest that will share her experience and her journey to all of us. So let's welcome Sarah. Hey.
Hello. Thank you, Adam, for having me. Super happy to be here.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for coming. By the way, Sarah, where are you based on?
Oh, right now I'm in Paris in France.
Oh, you're from France. What's the time difference between Indonesia? What time are you in your place right now?
Right now it's 11 a.m.
11 a.m. In my place, it's 4 p.m.
Oh,
yes,
I see.
Yeah, quite 7 hours, 8 hours, yeah. Something like that, right? I see. How's the weather over there? I hear the weather now is quite hot. Is it true?
Yeah, we've been like through heat waves like during the whole summer. It's been like that. So I think at some point we're at like 40 degrees, but nothing in France is made for hot weather.
Yes, I hear about it. Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, you'd go to places and there's no AC basically most of the time. So a bit crazy.
Oh my gosh. I hope you can survive this situation. Yes.
Thank you.
All right, Sarah, before we start, maybe we can start with a little bit introduction about you, what you do, and what's your role in the game industry. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I'm Sarah Macdud. I've been in the game industry for like a bit more than 4 years now, and I've mostly worked in social media, community management and development, and also corporate branding, so employer branding mostly in the game industry. And I've been at several places, such as Ubisoft, so in France, Focus Entertainment, so very known for being the publisher of like Plague Tale, Space Marine 2. And soon enough, I'm going to be joining Triband, who's an indie studio working on like their franchise called What the Games. So it's like very funny comedy games to play with your friend and on your own.
I see. We're going to talk about the role that you've been doing, how you do that, what kind of skill that needed to do that role. But before that, usually all of our guests, we're going to have some trivial question. So no need to worry. There is no right or wrong answer and no leaderboard. You don't have you don't have to find answer on the internet. So just some trivial question for you. All right. Sarah, for the first question, do you remember when you were a child, what is the first title, the first game that you ever played?
Ooh, that I ever played. I don't know if I remember the first one I've ever played. I remember the first one I completed on my own, because usually I would play with my brother and my father. And the first one that I completed on my own was the Pokemon Blue.
Pokemon Blue.
Yeah, I remember being very proud of that. So that was in my first game, but the first one I was like, I did it without anyone help.
You played on Game Boy? Game Boy Advance or DS?
I think it was Game Boy Color for me. It was like the yellow one.
Game Boy Color. The one that you can flip, right? I don't know.
No, I think it's the, you know, it's like the one that is like a giant cube kind of like.
I see. All right. The game that you play, the Pokemon Blue, in the Nintendo Color, is it belong to you or part of your family or your friends?
No, actually, it was my brother's. My parents had like they didn't know anything about video games and they didn't know anyone who played, so they thought like video games were for boys because of like ads in France. It would only be boys showcased in the ads, so we were like, we're getting that for him, and they didn't understand at first why I wanted to play, and they were like, okay, why not?
I see. That is really interesting. I'm becoming curious about the situation when you were a child. How in your family, how usually like the roles or the rules for playing game are they quite open for all of the member of the family to play game anytime, or there's some kind of restriction like you can only play games on weekend or something like that? How is it in your family?
Oh yeah, well, when I was young, it was you can only play like on weekends. So yeah, it was more like that. And for me, up until I was, I think 8, 9, they would like want my brother to play with me because my parents were are immigrants. We immigrated from Morocco here, and they had like 2 jobs at the same time, so we didn't have time, you know, to check everything I was doing. So my brother was there to like help me when I was stuck and be sure that like this game is appropriate for me, basically.
I see. But growing up, like, do you also like in your family have maybe PC, console, something like that, or like the Game Boy was the only friend that you had to play games?
Yeah, for a long time it was only Game Boy. I had my first computer at 13. So I'm quite lucky my parents got for me, and they were like, we don't know how to use it, but they were aware that everyone around us was using, where everyone was using computer a lot, so they got us like this family computer when I was a teen. And my brother, actually, with his first pay, made me like a giant gift. He got me the Nintendo DS when I was a teen, and he was like, "Ah, this is for you. I know you love game." And that was crazy. I could play like, I discovered Animal Crossing at that time. That was crazy.
Animal Crossing, amazing. Wow, your brother is pretty nice.
Yeah, super nice.
Super nice. Okay. All right. So that's the first question. The first game that you play. Now for the second question, the last game that you play before this recording session, like the one that you just recently finished or paused or you play.
Okay, so I actually played the demo that released yesterday for Thirsty Suitors, the game published by Annapurna. It's like
right.
it's a game where the story is that you go back to your family town and you have to face like your young adult, I guess you're in your late 20s, something like that, and you have to face like the expectation from your parents, the things that you didn't manage to do, and you also have to face your exes and how you hurt them at the time when you were maybe less mature. So you have like, you actually have like combat and things. You're like fighting your ex. Oh. So that was cool. I didn't expect that at all.
Yes, me too. From Annapurna, right? So usually the game is so awesome, so chill and philosophical. So this is, you fight in this game?
Yeah, you have... It's so cool. It's done by Outer Loop, and there's like fighting sequences with your ex, but you also cook. Like you have like cooking session with your parents, especially your mom. And you, since you're like a cool person, you're a cool gal in this game, you also have like whole skating part. So I was like, wow. That's a lot, and I really love it.
Interesting. All right. Need to check it out. All right. Is there any kind of like specific genre that you really enjoy to play, or you play any kind of genre?
I think my favorite game, I really like chill games, especially since I've started working. like, you know, after work and you don't want to stress yourself out, you don't want to think about anything. It's really nice to just go in a like a puzzle game or a chill game and you just relax yourself. But before working, when I was still a student, I was very, very into, way more into, you know, RPGs and MMO. I was super fond of Final Fantasy 14. So, yeah, my tastes are changing depending on what's going on in my life.
The same like music, right? Maybe sometimes you want to hear like some calming music. Sometimes you want to hear some emo music. Maybe after you've broken up, something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
I see. So, okay, the second question, the last game that you play a what's the title? The game from Annapurna?
Oh, it's Thirsty Suitors. I hope I say it well. It's by Outer Loop Games.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the last game that you play. The third question for you, besides playing video games, do you have any other hobbies, entertainment that you like to do?
Oh, yeah. I actually really love like arts and craft. I've started working on my own webtoon to relax outside of work. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
I wanted something when I can be creative and on my own and be allowed to do basically silly things. I was like, I want to, you know, to have that outlet where I can just go crazy. So yeah, that's that for me.
I see. So you like to draw, basically, like create stories, something like that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Is it published yet, or is this something that you keep for yourself?
It's published, but only in France right now. I'm going to publish it soon in on the international webtoon. And it's called Sorbonne and Prejudice.
All right. Okay. Please do let us know when it's available for international audience so everyone can take a look at it. Nice. All right. Sarah, last question before we start our discussion for today. Do you remember what is your dream job as a kid when you were a kid?
My dream job as a kid was to become an animator, to work in animation, like feature films and shows for kids. So quite different from what I'm doing today.
Yes, quite different. That's okay. A lot of people did that.
Yeah. Actually, I pursued it like very, very, like for a long time, up until I got my baccalaureate, which is like the, you know, the high school diploma in France. And then I sat down with my parents and we talked about it. And unfortunately, all of the schools to pursue animation in France, they're private and they're, you have to pay for them when the rest of France, like most schools are free. Yeah. So my parents couldn't afford it. And also they're very like realistic, like, you know, sometimes it can be a bit harsh. Sometimes we were like, oh, we are in another country. We don't know anyone in arts. Mm. We don't have network. So there is like very small chance you're going to be able to make it and things like that. So at the time I was like, okay, so I can't afford it. So I'll go for something else. But I'm quite happy right now. So in the end, I won.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much for the answer all of the question. I think this is going to quite help all of the audience to know you a little bit better, like from the game that you play, from the things that you do and something like that. So, Sarah, so in this podcast, we would like to talk about your journey in the video game industry, right? So most of our audience, maybe they are still new or maybe they're in other industry and want to switch career to the game industry or something like that. So maybe your story can inspire all of the ecosystem in France, maybe difference and some challenge maybe we are facing right now to in Indonesia and something that we can learn to. So for starters, to start the talk for today, Sarah, do you remember like when was the first time that you noticed that I want to work in the game industry and what is the trigger back then?
I think it was during my university years. At the time, I was still holding onto the idea that maybe I could go back in animation somehow, you know, because I saw on the internet that like some people managed to get into it way later in life. So I was like, maybe there is a way. But in the meantime, I can't do it. So it's okay. I'll look at other creative industries because I realized I wanted to be in something creative. And basically, I looked into cinema and I was like, okay, I don't like it. I looked into...
Why?
I think it's super interesting, but I also felt like it was very, like, it wasn't for me in terms of, like, you need to have... at the time, I didn't know anyone, and I felt like in cinema, especially, you really needed to have connection. And because there's so many people going into it, juniors, that was like, okay, that's a lot. That's also more, like, you know, creative process is different. So... I was like, okay, this one is not for me. Like live action cinema, let's see what else. Then I went into looking into publishing, like editing books and things like that.
Ah, book. All right.
Yeah. and I also was like, oh, that's not for me as well. And then I looked into games and I was like, it's weird because I've been playing games my whole life, but I didn't even think about games first. Because in my head, it wasn't like, a thing like there wasn't an industry. It was, I don't know why, I was like, oh, it just pops up, you know. Never looked into it, and then I looked into it, and I really really like games and the creative process and the fact that, you know, most of the time a game isn't done by one person, it's done by like a super big crew of people and talent. And I was like, oh, that's actually super cool that, like, there's no, how can I say that? There's no big star, like, in the sense where, you know, in cinema, you have the actors and then you have the director and you, and in the games, it's really like you have a team and everyone's working for it. And I really like this idea that it was like a creation of a group.
I see. And how was the first interaction that you have in the game industry? Did you start with internship or did you start with creating some game for Game Jam, something like that, joining community? How was the first interaction?
So for me, it was, I looked into Game Jam first. So very small one. At like schools I didn't attend, but they were open to everyone, so I went.
All right.
I was like, if I can invite myself, I will go. So that was great to see, you know, even working on the small games can enable you to learn a lot of things. And it was great to have, usually for me, it was Game Jam during like the weekend, like very small one. It was great to see how people think, to meet other people from like field I had nothing to do with. And I really liked it. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to try to get into the game industry. And basically what I've done is not super usual. I knew I couldn't pay for the schools as well.
Yep.
So what I did is that I tried to get into marketing first because I like marketing as well. And I knew that in France, there are top schools. I don't know if it's the same in Indonesia, but like top schools where like they have networks, they have like a lot of cool teacher, but they also have like partnership with Keys Company. I knew Ubisoft, which is like the big boy of France. I knew they had partnership with some of those top schools. And basically, I was like, I'm going to apply to only the one where I don't have to pay. So basically, I was like, I want an internship just to kickstart my career and meet people. So basically, I went for those public free school, which was kind of hard because it also means you're competing against 100 of other people. But that's how I did it. I was like, oh, you know what? I have nothing to lose. I'm just going to try the entry contest to see if I can enter the school. And then, well, I have a cool school anyway. And if Ubisoft doesn't want me, I can find other places that wants me. And Actually, I applied at Ubisoft and it worked out. So it was like... that was like crazy master plan.
Nice.
So I joined them as an employer brand assistant. So basically it means that you're working on, you're doing marketing for the brand, but like the brand of the company as an employer. So basically you're trying to target different kind of people. You're trying to see how people externally perceive you. Like, how do people want to start in the industry? Do they think about you when they want to start in the industry? Are they going to apply? But do experienced people as well think that you're cool? So that means like having like different type of strategy to attract different type of people. And also it has a lot of things to do with your internal community, so your employees basically. So the idea was, how do employees at Ubisoft perceive Ubisoft? Are they comfortable there? Do they think it's a good company? And mostly, if your employees go to, you know, most people, they go to game jams and they go to afterworks and things like that. And in those moments where they can get together, speak together, and also speak to other people from the industry, do they speak well of you? Or do they think that actually, nah, it's not a good place, don't come. So that's what you're doing when you're doing employer branding, is that you're trying to basically keep your employees so that they don't go to other companies because they think it's cooler, and also attract young talents, but also older talents, because you need both of them to work out as a company long term. So yeah, that's how I got my first job, my first experiences in the game industry.
That is really an interesting job desk that you did back then. So basically, you need to make sure that every part of the team, the crew, is happy and proud working there, and like talking about good things about the company, something like that. How do you make sure any of that? I mean, like working in the game industry, sometimes it's hard, right? You need to face deadline, you need to crunch, maybe you have a class with someone or something like that. And how do you make sure that everyone's happy?
It's actually very difficult. And you're right, for the all the work, the way you live your work is different for everyone, right? You can, in the same team, you can have like people who are super happy and other people who are like, oh, I'm done. Like, I'm just doing my work and then goodbye. So it's quite difficult. But the idea is that at least for employer branding teams, you're supposed to provide, you're supposed to be the one who goes, oh, let's send a form to everyone and see who's happy and who's not. Sometimes it can be very different, but sometimes you can see that in some fields, they're very unhappy. And in some other fields, they're very happy. Or even just different team in the same department, one is super happy and one is super unhappy. And basically, the thing you have to do is, if you're a nice person that I would like, is that you go, you send like anonymous forms and you ask people to tell you why. Sometimes it can be, you know, like things that you don't even think about first. Like, it can be like bad management. If like a whole team is unhappy, usually it shows that it's bad management, that something wrong, like there's something going wrong. Is it like people crunching? Are they forced to crunch? Are they like, or is it like a manager with no social skills who just like treat people as worker and like doesn't care about them as people? It's actually like, it can be common in some places, or is it like something even like something very hardcore, like sexual harassment, things like that? So basically that's the work of the employer branding, is to look internally what's going wrong. And so usually those teams, they're marketing, but also half of it, or managers in the employer teams, are HR. HR, because, you know, I didn't have, I don't have a diploma for HR, right? But employer branding is so linked to it that basically everything that is has to do with very like important things, it has to be taken over by someone from HR. I can do like social media posts on like a party at work or things like that, like fun things. But I wouldn't be able to handle like hardcore problems. Like, I don't know like juridically what's possible, how you can protect yourself, or to fire someone, like things like that. Like, so so basically employer brand, you think of it as like, there's one part that is marketing, and it's like the people who are going to do parties and who are going to post about it and ask people if they want to create a life around the company or not. Fair.
I see.
And then you have the HR people who are supposed to come in and be like, okay, we've noticed that those people are not paid enough, and that's why they're like sad, and we have to do something. And then they bring it up to upper management, like higher ups. So yeah, that was like that at least.
Wow, that is really interesting. But before we continue, there's something that I'm quite curious, and we need to go back when you're in college before university. The first time that you want to come into the game industry is when you did a game jam, right? You did a game jam, and when the game jam, what kind of role that you do? Did you draw? Did you code or design?
Yeah, it was drawing, because I don't know how to design at all.
All right.
I don't know how to code, so I really went in going like, oh, hello, I'm that girl from the other school there that like has nothing to do with this, but I can draw. So that was how I managed to get into game jams. And I would, at the time, I would usually go to game jams in like coding school. Basically that's how I did it, because at my university, when I was doing two bachelor at the same time, after my parents said, no, you can't go into art. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do two bachelor at the same time because I don't know what to do, and I'm going to keep doors open for me. But it had nothing to do with it. It was like languages, like it was like, you know, literature. So nothing to do with games or even like creative industries. So yeah, I kind of stalked other schools, to be honest.
I see. But when you first fell in love with the gaming industry and you started as a artist, right? Game artist, creating the drawing the asset for the games. Back then, like, did you already decided that I want to be a game artist, and after this, when I graduate, I want to apply as a game artist, or like this is something that changed after you learn about marketing, and then you see that there's a marketing also fun. So how it changed from drawing into marketing, and then after then go to as a Ubisoft as a what is it called, brand employee?
Yeah, employer brand assistant. It's employer. So long. Those new job titles. Basically what I did is that I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I went to those game jam, right? And I did art because it was the things that I knew how to do. And then I started, at the same time I was trying to see how, like, let's say if art doesn't work out, what's the next thing that could interest me, basically. I got really, really into communication. I was like, oh, that's actually fun to look at ads and wonder, oh, why is it like this? Or, you know, I really like that. So I was like, oh, maybe I should like read a few books about it, because I didn't have those type of classes at the time. So basically, I brought a lot of books. I brought also a lot of books on the game industry.
Like, what do you remember? Some book, maybe all the audience can try to find.
I have some of them still here.
Nice.
Maybe I can grab one.
All right, go ahead.
I brought this one at the time. So
Game Development Production.
Yes, Game Development and Production. And it's like a whole book about like production, and it also like helps you understand what's going on in the production teams. If you've never been in the industry, what exactly is the role of a QA, things like that. So that helped me understand a bit more what was going on.
That's a good one.
So yeah, since I didn't know much people, I was like, I can buy books. So that's what I did. And then I started getting way more into marketing. And I was like, oh, actually, I think I want to go for marketing and see if it works out for me. And if it doesn't, it's okay. I can always find something else. But basically that's how I went into animation, then maybe not, and to art in Game Jam, to marketing.
I see. That's really interesting. The role that you take in Ubisoft, it's under marketing department, right?
So I was, my manager was HR, but I was linked to both the communication teams, because internal communications, things like that, and HR, because of when it gets very serious, you have to let someone who knows laws do things.
true. That's different kind of skill set, HR, like.
Yeah.
Different kind of skill set. All right, so let's continue. After you join Ubisoft as a employer brand marketing, what else? What role for your next journey?
So after that experiences, I knew I wanted to stay in games, but I knew I didn't want to do employer branding anymore, because I was like, oh, actually, I think I want to do like marketing for games. Like that's what interests me. Basically, I asked at several people that were at Ubisoft at the time for little interviews during my internship with different job in marketing, so that I could call them for 30 minutes, ask them like a bunch of questions, and see what type of job I would like. Like, you know, it's something that basically I did out of blue, and I just contacted people, because you know you can have a list of all the people in the company, where they are in the world, and what games they work on. So I was like, this person looks cool. I'm just going to send them like an email and ask them if we can have like a little chat. So I did that with like for like my internship was 6 months, and I think for 4 months I was doing that.
All right.
On top of work, you know, after work, I'd be like, I love. So that's interesting, because I thought people would say no, because, you know, but actually most people were like, oh yeah, sure. And if I have one advice, is don't be afraid to reach out to people, even if you think you're no one. So I discovered a lot of marketing job that way, and I realized that I wanted to be a com dev, a community developer. So basically someone who works on the whole community strategy on social media, but also at events, who on a project, if there's like multiplayer features and things like that, very usually involved in production, because it means that the community is like a great part of the project, the fact that people are going to play together and things like that. So I realized that, and what I did is that I spoke to different people from the US, people from, at the time it was Singapore. So they were working on Skull and Bones. So I asked questions about that as well. People in France. And I realized that the rules are kind of different in all internationally, the industry is like super big. So there are regional like characteristic, and the way you get hired isn't the same everywhere. I mean, so basically in France, I was told, I was told by one of the marketing manager, if you want to have a good profile to be hired, you should at some point go into a marketing agency just to see what it's like and to test your skills. I don't know if it's true, but at the time I was like, okay, I'm going to try.
Let's do this. All right.
Yeah. Because, you know, for example, the person that asked question at in Singapore's and in the US, they didn't tell me that at all. So I was like, oh, maybe it's something just in France. But now that I have more experience, I realize that it's not necessarily true. You can get into the industry without going to a marketing agency. But at the time, I was like, oh, okay, he said that, so I'll try. So I went to a marketing agency actually just after Ubisoft.
Okay.
So for 5 months, I was like, okay, I saw what it was, and I didn't really like it because it was marketing. It was interesting. I learned a lot, but it was marketing for, like, you know, alcohol brand, baby food, even like initiative for young people. This one was the fun one, but like most of the time, it was product of daily life.
Okay.
I learned a lot, but I realized I wanted to go back to games because, to me, community management and development is super interesting in games because players are very involved. They very much care about the game. It's like part of their daily life. Of course, like the yogurt you eat is also part of your daily life, right? But you're not going to go on a forum and be like, this is the best yogurt I've ever eaten. So basically, I stopped the marketing agency and I applied to other places in France. And that's how I got my first full-time job at Focus Entertainment, which is like, it's a publisher in France, publishing like a Plague Tale, publishing Space Marine, a lot of Warhammer game as well. And that's how I started out as a community manager in games, working only on games. So I had 1 year of like, I don't know where I'm going. And then I managed to. So yeah, but I'm an example that you don't have to have a straight line path. You're allowed to just check out things and be like, ah, it's for me. Ah, it's not. Let's see.
Yeah. But one thing that I like from your story is like the mentality of, reaching out, keep asking question, even trying something, right? Like, you need to go to marketing agency, it make you a better person. Let's do this. Something that I think the kind of mentality that is very, very important in the game industry, right? To reaching out, asking help, ask for advice, something like that. And is it, is it something common in France to do that? Because like in Indonesia, most of the people is shy, like not confident enough to ask something like that.
I don't think it's super, super common because for example, when I said I was doing that to friends who were at the same time in the same company, they were like, what are you doing? Those people are very important. They don't have time like for us. We're just like interns. Like, who's going to speak to an intern? And I was like, you never know. So I basically went in with the you never know. And if it happens that someone doesn't answer you or just say, oh, sorry, I can't. But it's okay because for every person who says no or don't answer or can't at the moment, there's another one who's like, oh, yeah, sure. Let's do that next week. And I think if you're able to go past being like your shyness and thinking, oh, what am I doing? It's always worth shooting an email to someone or a DM on Twitter and be like, oh, I really like what you do. I'm really interested. I think maybe it's something that I'd like to do as well. Do you have 30 minutes to give me in the next few weeks? We can do it by, and also you can just like say, oh, we can do it by email if you don't want to speak, or we can just call each other and make it quick.
Yes, I think that's a very, very good advice. I think all of us need to try to do that. If you still don't understand, don't know the field, don't know anybody, you need to understand more. Don't be hesitant to ask. I think that, but of course, ask politely.
Yeah.
be nice. Because sometimes people ask like without proper introduction, without proper attitude. So make sure that you asked nicely. All right. Let's get back to the your journey. Like right now, you become the community manager, and I saw one of your tweet that you pinned that you create some videos about the game that you're working. the what the bat. I think that's really cool and that's really interesting. Anyone who listen to this podcast need to go to Sarah's Twitter and look at the video. My question is, was that part of the job? I mean, to be creating videos, something like that.
So yeah, at Tribend, it's actually this video is just something fun. Like I had friends over and I was like, oh, this new game I'm going to work on. It's a VR game and you don't have arms, you have baseball bats. Yeah. So maybe we can just do a video where I have baseball bats.
Yeah, that's so creative.
And just throw things at me and I try to. So that was just a way to say on Twitter, I'm leaving my former employee, but I'm still in the industry, so don't worry. And you're going to see me around working on that game. And it was very fun for my friends. They love throwing things at me. I'm asking myself some questions. But yeah, when you're a community manager, depending on where you work, they're going to ask you different type of skills. So there are studios and publishers where actually they don't need you to know videos or to know how to edit things because they have teams dedicated to that. So what happened is that in those companies, you work in partnership with like the video team, the cinematic artist. And there are other places where they don't have those team at all. So usually in the job desk, we're going to say, oh, we need someone who's able to edit video, someone who's able to create assets for social media on their own, someone who can stream on Twitch on their own. So it really depends on where you go. Usually for social media works, the job desk can be very, very different on what they focus on. But for anyone getting into social media, I think something very interesting is to learn how to edit things, especially since there's more and more video content and we can see that that's what people really like. My advice would be to start like trying out things, see how to easily edit a video, how to change its format, its size, little things that will help you out a lot during your daily jobs. And you don't want to spend like 3 hours looking at a YouTube video and going, what is that? Because we've all done it. We're like, yeah, I can do that. And then you're like, how to do this on YouTube? But yeah, I think if you want to get into social media, don't be afraid to try out streaming, like on Twitch. Try out, different platform. Like, for example, if you're focusing on Instagram, have you tried TikToks, things like that, to see what are the tools that you can use? And also, yeah, edit videos and create assets for social media.
I see. Do you need specific degree for community manager? I mean, for example, if, you have marketing background, right? But for example, for programmer, usually from computer science, maybe for artists, they're from animation, something like that. But for community manager, do they look for a specific degree or like background of study?
So that depends on where you go. I know a lot of people who got into social media and community management who it's not their field at all. Like, for example, my manager, he was trying to get a job as an accountant. So nothing to do with this.
Okay.
I have several of my friends who were like, before they were teachers or they were artists. It's very like different. So you can definitely find jobs where they don't care so much about your diploma, but they will care a lot about like your experiences. Like, if so, are you a streamer, for example, on the side, do you have experiences handling a community on your own? So usually streamer, they do have their own community. So it's a thing that you can use as experience that, I'm streaming and here's my community. Here's a number of people interacting with me on the daily, what I did so that it would improve those numbers, like that. At other jobs, it really depends on who's the recruiter, to be honest. So some are open to other diplomas and some are going to be like, we need someone who's into marketing. I've seen both cases, so really depends. If you don't have a diploma in marketing, I would definitely say try to get as much experiences as you can into marketing on social media. Even if it's volunteering work, like we at Focus, we hired someone who was actually a moderator on like for a big streamer. So those type of things actually matters, the things that you do because it's fun and you don't really get paid and you just like the games. It actually matters.
I see. Yeah, so that's how you can build your portfolio if you want to play as community manager, right? One of it. Yes, I see. Is there a lot of jobs opening or role that looking for a community manager in France? Because right now in Indonesia, I think because we are, the industry is still young, a lot of them still indie, small company, the title itself is not easily available. But in your case, like, is it there's a lot of opening in that role?
Usually, yes. It's we have a saying in the French industry that usually if you get into social media as a junior, you leave after 2 or 3 years. Which is actually true. There's a lot of turnover because, well, it's a hard job and people like don't realize it. Like sometimes you have to deal with online people, right? And sometimes you have to deal with people who are very, very upset. People who are crossing boundaries. I've had people who like found my address, things like
that. Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god!
And I'm like, how did you do that? I was shocked, but I was so surprised because I was like, how did you got that from one username?
Oh my god! All right, okay.
It's also something where it's a job where since you're in contact with people all the time, it can be hard in terms of mental health, in terms of like taking care of yourself. It's also the thing where like, the community, it never sleeps. Like when Asia is asleep, Europe and US are awake. And when Europe is asleep, Asia and the US. So basically it's a thing where there's always work, always a ton of work. So it's a thing to take into account, definitely. Because that's also why a lot of people are like, after, you know, a few years, they're like, okay, I've done it. I'm happy. Yeah. That's the way I got into the game industry, and now I want to do something else. And it's fair, you know.
Yep, true.
So, in France, we have a lot of opening for this type of job, and it's also seen as an entry level type of job. But the fact that most people are leaving the field after a few years, it means that we have trouble having like experienced people. People are like very, very looked after.
I see.
I think it's a very fair strategy if you want to get into the video game industry and you don't know how to start by community management. And most people that started at the same time as me, now they're doing things that are entirely different. Like now they're developers. Another one went into like... when on the production side and is a line producer. So it's a good way to see things because as a community manager, you will work with both production and marketing. You're going to meet a lot of people and you're going to be very involved in the game. So if someone like wants to get into the game industry and just start out with social media, I think it's a good thing. And if you're very passionate about social media, it's also a good thing because you'll see that as the years pass by, there's a lot of jobs, but there's less of us. So it's a bit of a gold rush. And that's as a person, you can say, oh, I want to this much. I want you to pay me this much to do that because I know I'm rare. So you can afford to. So it's quite cool as a whole.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Especially when you mentioned that this has become like entry point, right? Maybe somebody wants to work in the game industry and they cannot code, they cannot draw, they cannot design, they still don't know what is the game industry, and starting point as a community manager is one of the way. I heard like some other ways, like from QA, like from the quality assurance, that's also like a path, but this is all the another path that you can do to start jump into the game industry. Nice.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, often we have a joke, at least at Focus, I used to say QNC, and we're like twin brothers.
Oh, really? Why? Oh, because usually you report it to the QA.
Yeah, and also it's like, at least in France, I don't know if it's the same, but in France, it's like a lot of entry-level job in that, for that like job, it's an entry-level often, a lot of juniors, and often also a lot of bad pay, like, or at least low pay. So I used to say, oh, you know, we're the same, but we're in different department, but I see you see me. But that was at my employer at the time. I don't know if it's true everywhere.
They might be right. That might be right at some point. All right. Sarah, I also interested to learn more about your other activities in your spare time. Like, you also do volunteering, right? Like in the Friendship Garden and Women in Games. That's quite interesting. What drive you to do volunteers work like this? Is this something that become a problem in the game industry in France, or what do you think about it?
Actually, I noticed in France at least that, for example, in most places, like, you know, you go to work, but you also meet other studios and you go there and you realize very quickly that there's not a lot of diversity, like there's not a lot of women, but there are also not a lot of people of color. That is to say, there's not a lot of like Black people, Asian people, Arab people. So usually it's like a very specific type of person. And what I realize is that it's not necessarily a fault, but once you try hiring people, usually you try to hire people that are like you. So what happens is that if you only have men, French men, white men, usually they tend to hire people who are like them. And that just creates like a circle of like, oh, you arrive in a room and there's like 30 people and you're the only person who's like a woman, or the only person who's not white, or the only person who's not French. And I thought, oh, that's weird. Because since I was helping in recruitment, I was always wondering, I was like, oh, why is it like that when I see on the recruitment side, when people apply, it's not like that at all. You know, you have people of different, like, so I was like, maybe there's things we can do to improve that. And also speaking with a lot of friends who are from diverse profile and they're trying to sign their games and things like that. It can also be hard to get sponsoring. It can also be hard to get like even budget for prototyping, things like that. So that's why I got into Friendship Garden. I really like the fact that they were trying to change that, or at least help people who are looking for funding, but also people who are looking like for like attending events like GDC, like the big international one. I would never be able to afford it, you know, like it's so expensive.
So expensive. Yes.
And I was like, oh, I can't afford it. I don't think most people can afford it. And I think if you're not as well, if you have to travel to get there, it's just an impossible task. Like, and sometimes, I don't know if it's true, but sometimes when you're out of it, you feel like you really have to go there to sign, like, to meet publisher, to meet other people. And at Friendship Garden, they were like, okay, let's have a budget where each year we send people there. And it doesn't matter where you're from. And it's just it's a giveaway. And we try to send people to GDC. So yeah, if anyone's listening to that and wants to attend GDC, feel free to like reach out, because that's what we want to do, is that we want to send people who wouldn't be able to go otherwise.
Even from Indonesia?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this is only from France.
No. It's from all around. Yeah, feel free to go for it.
Okay, everyone. So, Friendship Garden, search it on Google. And how's the process? Do you, there is a form that you can fill up, something like that?
Yeah, usually we release a form in end of January, beginning of February. It depends on when the GDC is, right? But usually like 1 month and a half before, we release a form and we're like, basically, who are you? And we're like, oh, what's your experience? What's cool about GDC for you? Like, do you go because you want to sign a game, or do you go because actually you're a student and you want to meet other people? Do you want to go because actually there's so many conferences there that you want to watch? And there's no good or bad answers. We try to get like different profile. In the past we sent out student, but also people with project were looking for publisher because all the publisher go there. So just fill the form and we'll come back to you quite soon after, because we're aware like 1 month and a half is not a lot. So we're aware we need to buy you the tickets and stuff. So yeah.
but maybe before that, maybe some in our audience haven't heard about GDC before and why this is important. Can you maybe share a little bit what is this event and why GDC can beneficial for your career in the game industry?
Oh yeah, definitely. So GDC, I think it's short. Stop me if I'm wrong. I think it's short for Game Developer Conference, and it's a conference that is held in the US. And basically, what happened is that it's a big event where there's a lot of conference throughout all the event, and it's mostly big names from the industry, people who have a lot of experiences. They come on stage and they share like not only their stories but their processes. Often they're like, "Oh, that game worked. That project didn't. We're going to tell you like in 1-2 hour why is it like that." So that's a place where people share their knowledge together. That's the moment where even if you're from different studios, you're going to get all together and like listen to someone who's going to tell you all about their work. And what I really like, it's also about things that didn't work out, because it helps you learn through someone experiences, for someone else's experiences. And at the same time, during those conference, there's another layer of it where, since mostly everyone goes there, a lot of publishers are there. A lot of people go there to only sign projects. They don't even attend the conference, but they're there to meet devs who are looking for funding and are looking for publishing. And that's a really good way to meet, for example, like several publishers in the same week. You just go there and you ask for publisher like, "Oh, are you available now? When can I meet you?" You just like book a time slot with them and a place, and you can meet them. So that's very cool if you have a project, if you need a prototyping budget, very, very good. And another layer of that is that you basically meet people throughout the whole thing. You're going to have a lot of not only meetup at the event, but also a lot of like parties after work, after the event. So basically the whole city just turns into game developer hub.
Yep.
So very, very good if you're experienced, but also if you're starting out, because that's how you can meet a lot of people and learn a lot of things in a really small time. So yeah, I really, really think it's a good thing no matter your experience level.
It's correct. That's true. So for everyone who is listening, try look about GDC. This is, I think, one of the biggest hub for you to even starting your career. Like Sarah mentioned, finding publisher, get investment or funding for your game. This is the place where you can meet everyone, make friends. I think that's also important to make friends on that event too. So I know it's expensive, especially from our countries too. Like from France, it's quite far away, right? From Indonesia too. So the Friendship Garden can help you. They can provide you with the funding, right? To go to the GDC. Oh
my God.
That is awesome. That is awesome. All right. Sarah, time passed by very quickly because it's really nice talking to you. Almost 1 hour.
We already, oh, yeah.
Yes, we already talked for almost more than 1 hour. So this is going to be the last question. I think for our closing question for you is, for every audience out there like listening to this podcast right now, they are starting, they are trying to jump into the game industry, what kind of advice that you want to give to them?
I think one of the advice is definitely what we said earlier. Don't be afraid to reach out to people, even if you're shy, and try to get past it and be polite when you do it. And it's okay. It's really okay if someone says no. Really, really. Like, don't be afraid to reach out to like 5% at the time and be like, maybe just one of them is going to answer, maybe not. But don't take it as like a personal thing against you. Like, it's sometimes it just happens that you're contacting all of those people where it's production hell and they don't have time to answer. So I would say that. I would also say, don't be afraid to join local communities and also global communities online, and meet people and make friends. It's really like a good thing to meet other people and not stay in your bubble on your own, especially if you don't know anything about the industry. So don't be afraid to reach out. There's a lot of communities online as well, if let's say you're not in a big cities and things like that. So yeah, thank you, internet. That's the moment where we can all like start meeting each other no matter what. And with COVID, I feel like it changed the game in the sense where people are way more okay with like having Zoom calls and with like going on Discord and being more online, and people in the industry as well. So feel free to use this for you. So yeah, that would be my advice. And it's actually also really great when you're looking for your first job to know a lot of people, because for example, me, every time I look for a job now and they're interested in me, I just go to several friends like around the world, not just in France. And I go, oh, do you know them? Did you hear good things about them? Does it look cool? Like, did you have experiences? And that's how you can like have a sense of how the place you're going to join is viewed like in the industry globally, because sometimes people are very good relationship in only one country, but like, for example, you don't know it and they have very bad relationship with some of their partners' studio in other countries. And sometimes you're like, maybe I don't want to go there. So yeah, really don't feel ashamed to reach out and to speak with people. That would be my advice.
That is amazing. Thank you so much, Sarah, for taking your time to share all of this. I think very, very amazing insight and experience. And thank I think you. That is for today. I hope the discussion with Sarah can give all of you insight and courage to press start your career as a game developers. I think I'm Adam Arisa Smita. Keep playing games, start making games. Thank you, Sarah. Bye-bye,
thank
everyone.
You.